Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
Jim, is this real life?
I think so. Last
12-0. Has it sunk in?
You can't do any better than perfect. You know? There's nowhere else they could have done or could have gone. You know what my wife said to me the other day is how she kind of dreads football season because when Iowa loses, I'm kind of down for a couple of days. And she was like... She just commented on, and you know she's not a huge fan, but she's commented right. on the fact that this has been an amazingly pleasant football season for her.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like a free antidepressant for an entire season. So that's kind of it's a good thing.
It is. It's therapy for a whole fan base.
I'm sitting in my basement right now looking at the Big Ten Championship banner trophy I have in my wall and thinking about how I'm going to have to, you know, potentially take the plastic off and get a new little football to stick up there if they actually pull this one off Saturday.
Oh, so you know what I read the other day? Kirk Ferentz has never had an outright championship, and Hayden Fry only had one.
That's true, although I still maintain that, you know, again, 2002 was another season where he went perfect in the Big Ten. So to me, to criticize somebody for never winning an outright championship when he literally won every single conference game they played that year is an unfair criticism. Well, but that's an asterisk quibble semantics thing.
The Buckeyes, they were ducking us that year. Everybody knows that.
Just like the East is ducking the West again this year.
Well, they can't escape
much longer. But now
we
get to decide it. That's true. Well, should we introduce this podcast?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So this is the capstone of what would have been, I believe, the regular season podcast. 12 Saturdays, episode 12. I'm James Bladel.
And I'm Tori Brecht.
And we haven't used our lost music yet this year.
I can't even remember what it sounds like.
It's in the Apple loop somewhere. I have to fish it out.
So. You know, somebody pointed out to me that our podcast should actually technically be 11 Saturdays and one Friday.
That's true.
Now that we have this annual game, but
well, now
it doesn't have the same ring to it.
Now we have 11 Saturdays, a Friday, and another Saturday.
Yeah, my son asked me if this was going to be our last podcast or if we were going to do one for the bowl. And I said, well, we'll probably just keep doing it right through Iowa winning the national championship.
Sure, I see at least three more podcasts.
This is probably the first week where I've even let my mind think about a potential national championship with any sense of reality.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Or possibility.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because this is a quarterfinal game, right?
Coming up. I mean, we are... in effect in the Elite Eight if this was basketball.
We're in the final four.
I mean, come on,
with this team it's astonishing, it's astounding, it's stupefying, but
it
really
is.
Well, I think that, you know, the one thing that this team does really well, you know, more than, you know, any other Iowa team that I remember, is they do not buy into this continuing narrative where one week feeds into the next, good or bad. It's just every week is its own, you know, its own game. Now, the schedule was easier. I mean, well, last year was easier than this year.
That's probably true.
So, because you had all the powers in Kinnick last year. Now you had to go out on the road and take all your tough games. And so,
when I was thinking about that, you know, Iowa actually, they've won all four of their rivalry trophies back, and they accomplished it by winning three of four of them on the road.
That's amazing.
To win three road rivalry games in one season, that's something, you know, that we haven't heard anybody talk about. Yeah. Now, you know, people might look and say, oh, Iowa State, a down Nebraska team, and then Wisconsin, but I mean, those are three tough places for Iowa to win anyway.
And that's the thing, too, is you can't take anything away from this team or its schedule or anything. I mean, like, what was the stat that said the number of minutes each team has played either tied or behind?
Right, yeah, I wrote about that a little bit in my column this week, and that stat blew my mind, is that it's Clemson and Iowa, 55 minutes and 48 minutes, and those are the only two undefeated teams. And so that tells you how much more game control really means than the so-called eye test or explosiveness, in my opinion.
Yeah, and there was another stat, too. It was like, I think this was during the game, there was a trivia of like the three quarterbacks that have won their first 12 or 13 games. And it was, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, and CJ Beathard.
Yeah. And those two previous guys both played in national championship games.
And
so
won Heismans, if I'm not mistaken. So
well, he's only a junior. We've got time. Yeah. And, you know, I should interject here. Normally this would be the time where we talked about Nebraska and then did a toast, but, we're going a little out of order for celebrating the 12-0
mixing it up. It's curveball.
Mixing it up. So yeah, we're kind of looking at the big picture and the playoff thing. Again, we're recording here on a Tuesday night, Jim. Kind of a boring, I guess, episode tonight of college football playoff week that Iowa's been a regular participant in.
Same old, same old. Just another week at number four.
Every time that comes on the screen, I'm still like kind of do a double take, like why is Iowa's name up there? Yeah. This is weird.
Well, you know,
but what did you take from it? You know, I personally, I'm kind of shocked that Ohio State stayed up as high as they did, which kind of annoys me when I start thinking about Rose Bowl implications. But you know, who have they beat that's any good?
They played one good team and lost. Well, they beat Michigan, but they beat them. And here's another thing is Ohio State just murdered Michigan, and Michigan State just, you know, curb stomped Penn State. And that's what I think helped them out. There's your eye test, right? And that we only won by 8 points, which is, you know, which is ridiculous. But I do admit, watched all three of those games, and I will tell you that Ohio State and Michigan State both looked pretty scary.
I thought Ohio State actually looked a lot scarier, though. Yeah. I mean, that's a bad matchup for Iowa, way you slice it. And, you know, I really do think, you know, the Michigan State matchup is going to be a really exciting one between two even teams. And I think, you know, the Vegas line reflects that to an extent.
It's like 4 points. And, you know, win or lose, I mean, Sparty did us a huge favor by knocking Ohio State out of the Big Ten championship game and possibly out of the playoffs. Because get past Michigan State, I like our chances with Clemson.
Yeah, I'm having trouble just even envisioning Iowa being in a legitimate college football Final Four.
Okay,
let's play this out though. If you look
at the other three, if you win,
I will be honest,
if you win, though, you got your choice of Clemson, Alabama, or Oklahoma. And the way those other two are playing right now, I'd take Clemson twice, you know, every day of the week and twice on Sunday, man.
Well, any way you look at it, you're going to be going up against a team that has a lot more star power and high level recruits. I think I have, you know, who I actually think I'd prefer, Alabama, and I'll tell you why. They play an Iowa type of game. They do it better even than Iowa, but they've shown that they can turn the ball over, and they kind of let teams hang in with them. Auburn, that was a big rivalry game, but Auburn's bad this year and hung in with them. Although I think top to bottom, they might still have the most talent, I think Alabama might be the best matchup for Iowa.
You know, or give me the Oklahoma team that Texas ran off the field.
Wherever that came from. Because you look at them now, and they are terrifying.
Well, you know, and here's an interesting bit. There was a thread on one of the boards where a comparison of the old BCS system versus the playoff, and there was a discussion that, you know, under the old system, there was a significant deference given to undefeated Power 5 teams. And so it wouldn't even be really a question. It would be Clemson and Iowa, and everybody would be complaining about Iowa. But there was no way somebody was going to put a one loss, I don't care if it's Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan State. So instead of playing in Indy to get to the playoffs, we would be playing Indy to get to the national championship. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, and even crazier to think is that pre Big Ten championship game, we'd just be playing potentially Clemson somewhere in a bowl game for a national championship.
Or just going out to, or they would be going down to Miami to play,
right, to play the Oklahoma Bowl against Oklahoma, and we'd be playing Stanford.
Yeah, yeah, and we would beat Stanford, and they would still anoint whoever won that Oklahoma Clemson game.
So. Yeah, I mean, you gotta like it better this way at the end of the day, don't you? That everybody gets to prove it on the field, more or less.
I guess, but you know, you can't stop. It's not even 2 years old, and they're already talking about the 8-game playoff and what that will look like, and you know, how can
I
you
said
turn
eight
your back?
To begin with? I said eight to begin with because. And I think what you're kind of seeing this year is that, and you're seeing even the committee struggling with this, is that you kind of have to give every team one mulligan, right? I mean, now Iowa didn't need a mulligan.
But it's different every year. This year, yes, but not every year.
Not every year, but I think what happens when you go to eight, you're seeing now there's teams with two losses in the top eight, okay?
Right.
So by the time you get to eight, you're starting to talk about teams with two losses, and then once you've had two losses, you got no complaint at all if you're not in a national championship
picture.
All right,
so how about
zero, gone, none.
So how about six with the top two get a bye, and number two and number three get to play in their home stadium?
It's overly complicated, and then even to make it even more simple, think about this with the whole Power 5, non-Power 5 conundrum. Power 5, five champions, three at-large teams. Boom, eight, done.
All right.
And then seed them. I mean, it makes so much sense. It's so simple. That's why they'll never do it in the NCAA.
Yeah, well, you have to account for those situations where Notre Dame is going to screw that up 1 year out of every 10. And
yeah, but there's three at-larges, so I mean,
who
are they going to screw over? They're going to screw over like a Houston or a Memphis or Utah or something like that,
because
I guess Utah's in a real conference.
In this particular year, you know, the SEC really has Alabama and nobody else, and Big Ten has three teams that could go toe-to-toe with Alabama, so...
Is true, but this is again the beauty of getting all the way down to eight. So that happens, and Notre Dame gets in over Ohio State that didn't even get in its conference championship game.
Yeah,
I mean, once you're down to that level, you run out of arguments to say I should deserve a shot at the national championship.
We're gonna be
you're fringe anyway.
I'm fine with that. We'll just be playing college football into March Madness, and I'm fine with that.
let's keep going.
So, yeah, well. It's and then, you know, in addition to playoffs, we have a lot of individual news stories coming out now. Kirk Ferentz, Coach of the Year for the Big Ten. I think everybody saw that coming, right?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, so well deserved. I mean, you know, I think D'Antonio did a heck of a job. Harbaugh did a nice turnaround job in his first year. But, you know, we're talking about a man that is now resurrected and buried the same program a couple times. I mean, it's truly remarkable. I mean, I think we talked about a potential turnaround season, and we're thinking, man, how excited would people be if he can hit that 9 or 10 wins and a nice bowl thing, and we zoomed past it.
Yeah. Well, and so this is his fourth, which ties him with Bo Schembechler. Puts him ahead of Fry, puts him ahead of Paterno, puts him ahead of Hayes. You know, none of these guys had Coach of the Year. So, wow.
You know, and I, you know me, I'm usually black and gold Kool-Aid guzzler extraordinaire. But I do want to point out, though, that, you know, Urban Meyer
probably should have won.
Quit completely undefeated, won a national championship last year, and didn't win. Now, obviously,
he wasn't undefeated
on a curve. Well, nearly.
He's never been undefeated. Ah.
Okay. He went undefeated in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's true. But he hasn't done with food, so.
But, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, I do think it's easier for coaches that overachieve.
Yes.
To win it. That seems to be the criteria rather than just overall year in, year in, out excellence. But an amazing award nonetheless.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously D'Antonio will probably pick any year of the last three. He probably should have been up there. And I think if they'd beaten Ohio State, Harbaugh probably would have been neck and neck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, in some ways, it's almost like a turnaround award, you know?
It really is. It's the turnaround guy. And that raises, I mean, you think you touched on it earlier, it raises a good point, is it easier to turn around a program than it is to maintain it? Because Ferentz has trouble with the latter.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, frankly, that's kind of what's amazing about what D'Antonio has done the last few years, keeping up in that double digit win thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I will say, though, that it depends on the program, too, because, I mean, we all talk about Iowa's natural deficiencies, you know, sharing a state with another Power Five conference team, being the smallest public school in the university in a poor recruiting area in a state with no large cities with a low population. I mean, you're behind the eight ball there anyway. So, you know, it's kind of unlikely to think you can just become and stay at the elite table.
So how is D'Antonio doing it? He shares a state with a power conference school.
Well, that's true. He's also in a much higher population state. He's at a, you know, a gigantic state school as well, larger too. But yeah, no, it's a remarkable he's been able to do. I don't think they're going to stay. He's also had two NFL caliber quarterbacks in a row.
That's
two.
The key. Three.
And never discount that.
Three, I think. And Connor Cook's probably going to play in the NFL as well.
I was counting Cook. I was thinking Cousins, didn't. Cook.
There was
Who else?
One. There were a couple others there.
But yeah, that I think that the, you know that does help, and I think they've, you know, just like Michigan, that whole Michigan Ohio area is a very fertile recruiting ground.
Right. So it's Cousins. It's where are we at here? Yeah. Where's the other guys? There were a couple more. The last couple. Who's the guy before Cousins?
I don't know. Jim Miller played at Michigan State.
Yeah.
He's old and fat now, though.
Drew Stanton.
Oh, yeah. I remember that guy.
Brian Hoyer, Nick Foles.
Nick Foles played at Arizona State.
He transferred. Yeah. So, it was Arizona. Not Arizona State, but I think that he transferred. And yeah, so I mean, but they just kind of cranked out that. And I remember when Cousins left and they put up Connor Cook, and remember he had kind of his coming out party against Iowa because he was coming into Kinnick, and I'm like, oh, this guy is supposedly just brand new quarterback, total disaster, and he just lit us up.
2013, that was a nice game he had.
Yeah, and he hasn't looked back ever since. Although. The number two, second team, all Big Ten quarterback or BTN quarterback is Beathard. I was surprised by that actually because I don't see him. He doesn't have the stats. I mean, obviously he's you know an indispensable leader on the field, but just putting him head to head against other quarterbacks, I think you've got to put Sudfeld in there. You know,
but can you really give it to a guy that's team is 6-6 or 7-5 though? I mean,
are they individual awards then or not?
Yeah, but I think you have to look at, you know, what would Iowa's record be without CJ there, you know?
Well, I think we saw that last year.
Yeah.
Same team.
So I think that's what you're looking at there is that, you know, he's a game manager in the best sense of the word in from the standpoint that he's going to put your team in position to win. I mean, the guy's never lost a football game. He started in college. I think second team isn't too much.
What kind of voodoo do you think has he been into? And that's just weird, right? I mean, you're jockeying for the starting job all last year and then you finally get it. Yeah, I'm just not going to lose anymore.
Well, you know, one of the theories I've seen kind of hammered around there that I found interesting is that he's been around the big time his whole life. You know, I mean, he's rubbed shoulders with country music stars. He's rubbed shoulders with NFL athletes. His you know, grandfather was a NFL GM. So no stage is too big. No lights are too bright. I think about how much that matters in college football.
Yeah, nothing fazes
college football is. And it's a game about mistakes. I mean, that's the thing that the little niggling secret of Iowa's success is here that I don't think people get is that if you are a college football team that doesn't make mistakes, you're almost impossible to beat.
Well, that's Ferentz's entire defensive game plan is predicated on the idea of wait for them to make a mistake because they always
do. And it's his offense too. As soon as they don't have to score, it's amazing to watch it unfold. You know it's game theory, really.
You know what it reminds me of is, right now, it's like when they say eye test, I'm thinking about like a lion or a cheetah or something, you know, out in the wilderness taking down, it's dramatically taking down a zebra or wildebeest and chewing on its neck and, you know, viscerating it and chowing down on the red meat. And I think Iowa is closer to, you ever watch any documentaries about like a Komodo dragon?
Mm-mm.
So Komodo dragon doesn't really like, I mean, I guess my understanding is that they're not really fast or they don't really have any, like, you know, special, you know, I mean, they're strong and everything, but what they do is they wait for something to walk up on top of it and then they just bite down and they just never let go. And eventually, eventually you just bleed out because you get this 5,000 pound thing hanging off of you that won't let go. And it's just like waiting for you to trip or, you know, get an infection from where it bit you or something. And
just get in its way and eventually you'll be dead and it will be thriving.
Exactly. It's like, I could wait 6 months for my next meal. You're only going to last a week.
That is a good, because my description was going to be a boa constrictor that, you know, you just slowly squeezes you until you are incapacitated and the next thing you know, you're gone. And
it's funny because every team that loses to, and I think you mentioned this in one of the columns, is every team that loses to Iowa is just incredulous. They're like, we were so close. If only we had just this one little difference here or there, the other thing, you know, and it's like, but you know what? You really weren't. You never were.
Yeah.
You know. Well,
and I said it on Off Tackle Empire today. I said the only thing bigger, you know, the only thing longer than the list of excuses Iowa's opponents have made is Iowa's winning streak. So, well, I mean, we're just piling up wins while they pile up excuses. Yeah. You know, it's at some point it can't always be the other team's fault, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Well. Well, what we should probably do is toast this one and then move on to
toast the season, huh?
Toast
of the regular season. Do we need to toast 2015?
Astonishing. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thunk?
Speaking of toasting, how about those boots we were taking down at the Essen House? Or not the Essen House, I'm sorry. The Bierstube in LeClaire.
Hey, you know, those were...
they were going down pretty smooth there the second half.
I only had like 3 blocks to drive, and I probably shouldn't have.
It's uphill the whole way.
My wife ended up, literally. I think. Yeah, it was. It's like turn left, turn right, and you're home. So, but, well, yeah, we'll toast this one, and we'll move to our guest.
So it's about that time for the wheel spin this week, Jim. I think that I did it last week, and you maybe have some beer muscles left over from those boots we did.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's back from the shop, right? We switched over to the mink oil, you said?
Yeah, the salmon oil was starting to smell kind of rank in there.
But, you know, its lipids were much lower, so... Good on
yeah,
you,
my
wheel.
Good cholesterol is like through the roof right exactly. now from it's all the salmon oil. But so no, omega-3s. Mink oil, it should be real smooth.
All right, well, let me give it a spin.
My goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin. We could do a commercial while this is going, couldn't we? Make a little extra money?
All right, so I need your interpretation here, Tori. What does this mean?
That is correspondent on the scene.
Correspondent on the scene? Do we have one of those?
We actually do this week. We have live and in person our good friend Flick, who you may recall from like 3 or 4 podcasts ago. And he is a Omaha native and a dyed-in-the-wool Husker hater. Ooh. And so what's better for a guest this week?
He's got it bad, too. He really hates those guys. So welcome, Flick.
Hey guys.
So this must have been just so delicious for you on Friday.
It was perfect. You can't ask for a better. I mean, you can't ask for a better Hawkeye victory than in Memorial Stadium. It just doesn't exist. I wish they could all be
there. I'll challenge you to come to actual Camp Randall with me sometime, which you've promised to do in the past and have not managed to follow through.
See,
on.
And neither of you guys have ever, watched from my living room when we lose to Iowa State. I'll just put that out there. Everybody's got their ghost that they, you know, their the monkey they've got to get off their back, their white whale of an opponent.
And that clearly that white whale is Nebraska. We've only beat them twice in my entire lifetime. What, probably three, maybe four? I don't know how old you guys are exactly, but victories in Camp Randall have been more of a thing than victories in Memorial Stadium. So give me that at least.
I was going to say that, Jim, that you know, first of all, our advanced age compared to Flick, and then also the fact that our Iowa State and Wisconsin were so bad for so long before they got, well, Wisconsin got good. Iowa State just got slightly less bad. But yeah, beating Nebraska has not been something many Iowa fans have gotten to see.
That's true. In fact, we probably have a better record, I would say, against Michigan over the last over the same period of time. So Bill, you hail from Nebraska, from Omaha. We don't hold that against you. You're a Hawkeye. You bleed black and gold, but a lot of your family is they're Husker fans or even Husker alumni, right?
That's true. Yeah, I mean they're Council Bluffs, Western Iowa people. So I don't know why the smart ones are like, we grew up in Iowa, we're Iowa Hawkeyes, we went to Iowa. And the not as smart ones are like, well, Lincoln's 50 minutes from here, we're Huskers.
So it must have been an interesting Thanksgiving dinner then, to get all those folks around the table the day before the game, right?
Well, basically starting as soon as the final gun sounded on their resounding victory over Rutgers, we still had Purdue week, and I was hearing from them, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. So yeah, you guys know from the text thread that we have, I've been worried about that game for 2 weeks.
So here's what I want to know is that, did you do as I instructed and like talk as much smack as humanly possible? I know that you were a little nervous and worried, but your team is 11 and freaking 0 going into it. Please tell me that you at least put on a brave face in front of the Huskers.
I was brave. I didn't run my mouth pretty much until we were actually in the game, just because it's my luck, it's my karma that you know, my team would be 11-0 and have that stupid blemish to Nebraska. But luckily it didn't end up that way.
So you didn't do a reading of my complete trash talking column for the Grace at Thanksgiving dinner? That's what I'd have done.
I should have done that. No, I wasn't thinking. But I'll tell you what. So I was in the game. We tailgated with Nate Meyer's family, which was awesome. They're the nicest people in the entire world. So there obviously wasn't a lot of Husker fans there. So we get into the game and I'm like, let's go, baby. And like, I kind of almost wanted it to be like crappy fans just hating so that I could hate back. And so we threw the first, or we picked it off first. I think it was Cole Fisher who made the pick. And so I say out loud to the people that I'm with, but in that voice that you want everyone around you to hear, you know, we're not the Lincoln PD. Stuff like that doesn't get by us, Mr. Armstrong. And yeah, I thought it was a pretty funny line too. And I just look around and it's like 55-year-old, just solid American citizens who just happen to be Nebraska guys, all just solemnly staring ahead. And I'm like, man, like, it's not even fun to talk smack. So I guess I was an okay fan going forward as well.
It sounds like you were sitting in the Nebraska equivalent of our section at Kinnick, now our new section.
Yeah, Jim and I get yelled at for talking too mean about the opposing team in our section at Kinnick. It's insanity.
We were also like admonished that we stand up too much.
Set the scene though for us a little bit, Bill. I've actually never been to Memorial Stadium live and in person. I got to tell you, beautiful looking stadium, and it sure sounded loud and engaged. What was the atmosphere like there?
Well, it's pretty crazy because I would go to Nebraska games periodically as a kid, And it never used to be that loud of a place. It was kind of like a retirement home in there, just a lot of old Nebraskans. And then they built this amazing press box in like 2000. And then just in the last couple of years, built like three other levels opposite it. So sound kind of gets trapped in there. And I'm not going to lie, it was pretty loud. It wasn't like 2003 Iowa, Michigan loud, but it was imposing. And luckily, we kind of struck first. What was it? The Kittle touchdown and the Cole Fisher INT right off the bat. To kind of, so they had to play catch up a little bit. I can't imagine if we got it down like by 10, I think that would have been a hornet's nest. So thank God we kind of jumped out, quickly.
Yeah. Take them out of it. So were you sitting with mostly Iowa folks or was it mixed in your section or?
It was kind of mixed. But the Iowa folks in our section, there was a couple of guys, and again, they were probably in their 60s too, right in front of us. We had sweet seats. And I tell everybody, scalp, don't spend $180 on a ticket 2 weeks ahead of time. Scalp, we got ours for face value, and we were on a 35-yard line. It was beautiful.
Nice.
But, I mean, we were kind of the riffraff because it was respectable, nice folks. But as the game went on, it kind of thinned out, and it was more Iowa fans in our section.
So more it was importantly, great to, Bill.
I was going to say it was just great toward the end of the game to for everybody to go, you know, 12-0, 12-0, and yeah.
That was awesome to hear. The most important question though is how many victory pickles were consumed in your section? Where did you follow the instructions?
Yeah, absolutely. I brought just a Ziploc bag with two, one for me and one for my sister's boyfriend, because the girls were like, we could not talk them into this or get them on board. They're like, why are you putting a Ziploc bag of pickles in your pocket?
Well, it doesn't work on women.
Well, there you go. But
you gotta have the right kind of you have to have the right kind of game to get the girl to nibble your pickle, Bill.
Maybe I need to hang out with you more and learn some.
I was gonna say I don't know what kind of game you're talking about, Tori. There's no girls.
I ate like two of Rob's tiny pickles.
Oh no, we're just
at our game.
Now we go. Can we stop with the pickles?
I brought the big, swarthy, girthy Nathan's half. Kosher dills, though. That's the way to go.
You know, Bill, I can't help but notice the disconnect or the contrast between the Nebraska fans as you and has have others have described to me in the stadium versus the fan base that we seem to encounter just in the Twittersphere and online. You know, Tori, of course, put his Twitter account way out there in advance of this game with the smack talk. I didn't tell you guys this, but somebody, you know, with the 12 Saturdays domain name, somebody's been trying to break into that all week in the run-up to the game. It's just been a little, it's been crazy. But yet, everybody you talk to has, you know, will tell you over and over again just how nice and pleasant and polite the Husker fans are. But as we were just chatting a little bit before you came on the show, is a little deluded, not quite grounded in reality as to what their team has or what it can be. Thoughts?
Well, so for all the nice, solid, square guys that were rooting for Nebraska in the stadium, downtown Lincoln at the bars after was a different story. It was kind of my cohort. But it was, you know, just goons, dudes with goatees and camouflaged hats with the ends on them coming up, like, you're going to get stomped by Michigan State. To which I replied, you know, Michigan State got beat by Nebraska. I think we're going to do okay. and you know, here's another one. My idiot cousin sends me a meme, and it's the little African kid looking up at the white lady skeptically. I'm sure you guys have seen that. And the caption is, so your best team ever barely beat our worst team ever. That's the mentality of these people.
So that I heard, I was just telling Tori before you came on, that's exactly something I was hearing is like, well, you know, this is Iowa's best team in 100 years. And this is probably our worst team ever. And they're only 8 points better, though. So that's indicative of just how far apart these two programs are.
Yeah, it's that, you know, 1990s, we were awesome. And now they're, you know, overweight former high school athlete who still thinks he can pick up all the chicks or something.
You know, and I wouldn't normally, you know, I can admit that they've had more winning seasons, and they've had Iowa's number for a while. We've had worse lows lately. But in terms of actual relevance, though, Iowa was legitimately in the national conversation for a national championship in 2009. And then, you know, right in there in the 2002 era as well. They literally haven't been to a BCS level bowl game since 1999.
They played for a national championship in 2001, but got spanked by Ken Dorsey and the Hurricanes. But yeah, your point stands.
Or is that the last time they won a conference championship was 1999? You know their history much better than I do.
They haven't won a conference since 1999. Remember, they got spanked by Colorado and backed into national championship, which okay, Black Friday 2001 is kind of like the day Nebraska died.
Okay. Regardless, Iowa's been in the national conversation three times since the last time they were, including this year. So that's not even a legitimate argument.
Not to a sane person.
I think that's the point, Tori, as we were using this conversation as, you know, being illustrative of just how far disconnected from sanity, reality, and rational thought this fan base is. And I mean, we have, you know, I mean, certainly had our share last year and in 2012 on this podcast where we just rip on our team. They kind of, at least lately, and this is their worst, you know, 5-6, possibly 5-7 coming up year, you know, just watching the mental gymnastics they have to do on why this doesn't count, why it's not, you know, indicative of their program and why they did just somehow the results on the field are not lining up to the actual level of the team. And it's just like, come on, you know, at some point reality's got to smack you in the face here.
Like, are we dealing with like Minnesota fans 15 years after their 7 national championships?
No.
Like they're
no.
not.
Because
Minnesota fans yet, but they still have inflated egos.
Maybe, but I mean, Minnesota fans cheer when they get a first down. So I mean, it tells me there's a fan base that's got realistic expectations. Okay.
Well, here's what Nebraska fan reminds you of. It's like you ever watch those behind the music shows, right? That were big on MTV. They're like right in the part where it's like their life spiraling down the drain into addiction and decay. They're in that portion now. You know, they're the once great rock star that's like aging and fat and got face down in a pool full of their own vomit, cocaine, and Jack Daniels talking about how awesome things used to be, but they're still a big name.
Yeah, exactly. No, like I was saying, like, they're not Minnesota bad yet, but they're getting there. And we just need to, you know, keep pounding them another decade or so. And then they'll be cheering when they get the first down and their stadium will be named after a bank. And
yeah, at least online, at least it's a friggin' rivalry now. I don't care what they say, but they talk so much smack leading up into this game. And Iowa fans gave it right back. I think that this is going to heat up here. Jim and I were kind of talking about that before you got on the line is, you know, if Iowa wins in Iowa City again next year, and they, why wouldn't they? They have a great team and they've got Tommy Armpunt. This is going to be a hot rivalry.
I hope so. I can't wait.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'm glad that this was everything you had hoped it would be, and it lived up to the, you know, to your expectations. But pivoting.
Is it true? One last question. Is it true that Iowa gave the game ball to Tommy Armstrong after the game?
He would have just given it right back.
If they did.
He would have just given it right back, Tori.
He would have just, exactly. I was rewatching that game, Bill, because I, you know, when you're watching person or live on TV, I feel like you don't really get all the nuances. So I hadn't had a chance to kind of like watch it unemotionally for the most part. So I rewatched it tonight. Tommy Armstrong literally could have had 9 or 10 interceptions. And I'm not even exaggerating to be a jerk. I mean, literally, he threw 4, and there were at least 5 others that were in Iowa hands or up for grabs.
I read somewhere today, I don't know if it was one of the sites, that we blitzed an uncharacteristically high 12 times, and I think 3 of those resulted in interceptions, another handful resulted in incompletions. I mean, I think the coaches just were in Tommy Armstrong's mind and game-planned him amazingly.
It worked.
It was ridiculous. I mean, he had – I can't even – and, you know, most of their yardage he racked up, passing was in the equivalent of garbage time in the second half, where that game really wasn't even – that in doubt when you watch from a game control standpoint. Just nuts.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty. It really was. The game plan, if you looked at the stats ahead of time, you're like, oh god, I was gonna get smoked. But credit to our coaches, they knew what they were doing.
So, you know, I'm gonna disagree with both of you there. Defensively, it was a great game plan. I think offensively, I still had a lot of concerns, but anyway, I can't argue with the results, but
Jim's annoyed by those plays where you hand it to the running back one time and he just scores a touchdown. He wants to see a drive.
I'm not annoyed by those plays. I just said you take those two away and you take the pick six away. And we had one drive, one productive drive, and you need to, even if you just want to kill clock, you need more than one.
Jim, drives that ended touchdowns are productive drives, whether they're one play or 15 plays.
What are you, a Nebraska fan? Touchdowns don't count all of a sudden?
No. You guys, go look
if ifs and buts are candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, Jim.
Oh, you guys. I'm saying that, you know, in an opponent like Michigan State, where you can't count on the quarterback to give it to you 4 times, where you're going to need to be able to convert more than 0 third downs, I'm just saying, just putting the caution out there that, you know, the offense did not have a great day.
Well, in all seriousness, though, I think game conditions and field conditions dictated a lot of the game plan. And I mean, you were there in person, Bill. It looked miserable, cold, windy. I mean, you know, I don't think Iowa is going to have a super conservative game plan playing indoors in Indy.
I really don't either. And maybe this is my blood thinning from being in Los Angeles or whatever, but I can't remember a game that cold. Maybe 2013 Michigan. It was windy. It was cold. It wasn't what she wanted to be throwing the ball around in, and it wasn't what Tommy Armstrong wanted to be throwing the ball around. And that's why we passed 5 times in the second half. I think weather totally had something to do with it. And I hear you, Jim, but I think in Indy and going forward, whether it's Pasadena or Phoenix or wherever, we're going to see a better offense out of Iowa.
All right. Well, I hope so.
You got to remember, Jim, we were talking Matrix level Kirk Ferentz game strategy here. He's already 3 games ahead of everybody. He knew in the muck and the mire these last 2 weeks, he didn't need to do anything offensively. Oh. So Michigan State's going to expect us to just come run that same zone stretch run that Kanzeri scored on twice. But this time we're going to play action deep to Von Smith. It's going to be a thing of beauty.
It will be, because we're way out in front in the psychological head games. I mean, he paid off Terry Swales, so he had the weather on his side. so we'll have to see if it can work again next week. So looking ahead then to next week, Bill, I mean, we're just talking a little bit about, you know, I think, you know, we probably owe Sparty a bit of a favor, because Ohio State's looking kind of scary right now. So knocking them out of the championship is probably a good thing.
Absolutely. I don't want any part of Ohio State. Give me the team that Nebraska was able to buy.
Yeah. Well, here's the part about this matchup that I love the most, is that you're going to be watching 2 coaches and 2 teams battling all week to prove which one is more disrespected and which team should have a bigger chip on its shoulder. I mean, poor D'Antonio, the only team he could have possibly faced where he can't play the respect and little brother card is frickin' Iowa.
Yeah, when's going to be his coach of the year?
Exactly. All the MSU fans on Reddit, I don't know if you'd get on Reddit, were bemoaning the same thing. At least I guess they have that we're ranked 4 and they're ranked 5 or whatever to hang their hats on. But
yeah, it is. Everybody's kind of digging for that little bit of disrespect. But what do you see? You like this matchup on Saturday?
I do. I think we start to see our deep passing game start to hit again. I mean, we're not playing outdoors. I hope we get Akram Wadley in the game. I mean, I agree with you guys. He's like Jamal Charles. He's a real running back out there. Not that Jordan Kanziri disappoints, but I think the offense gets going. Connor Cook's obviously scary, but they'd be lost to Nebraska. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm just worried about that.
Well, and then two of their marquee wins, Jim and I were talking about this, two of their marquee wins were games they never led. So, you know, I've been saying I see this game as a total coin flip. I don't think either one of these teams is going to be able to run away from the other. I certainly don't think Iowa has a big edge almost anywhere, but I don't see Iowa really having a huge hill to climb talent-wise against this team or schematically either. So, I mean, it should be just – it's going to look – a little bit like the Iowa-Wisconsin game, only with more offense. That's my feeling, because two better quarterbacks here.
I agree 100% with you. And, yeah, our stats are very similar. But I'll go back to Kirk having a 4-3 record over D'Antonio. Maybe he's got him in that respect.
So, yeah. So, well, we're going to probably put you on the hook here for a minute to give your prediction on this game. But let's go back and look at the picks we made last week, Tori, and just see how well we did on that one. I think the one that we diverged
this
on... Last week in relevance. It's irrelevance. But the one that we diverged on was the Maryland...
This is where we talk about the teams that aren't in the top four like us.
Yeah, let's look at how everybody else's season ended. How about that? I picked Maryland over Rutgers. Boy, it looked like you were looking like a genius there for about 3.5 quarters. Maryland pulled that out. We both picked Minnesota to beat Wisconsin. What were we thinking?
Wishful thinking.
We both picked Michigan to beat Ohio State. Yeah, again.
Whoa.
Yeah, couldn't have been more wrong there. But the good news is we both picked Indiana, we both picked Northwestern, and we both saw Michigan State beating Penn State, although I don't think either of us really predicted the curb stomping that we actually got. So overall, we missed on two. Each of us missed on three. We went 3-3. It's just that third one was a little different.
Wait a second.
I got one more than you. I went.
Because you got Maryland.
Yeah, I went 4-2. You went 3-3. So.
Yeah, and I should have known better on that Michigan Ohio State one too, because I even warned myself before I picked Michigan. I was like, all this talk about Ohio State imploding is going to be premature. That I should have listened to myself, but I didn't.
Well. We've got a few that we can pick now if you want to talk a little bit about some of the championship games coming up. We've got Clemson versus North Carolina.
Let's get Bill's picks on this, too. Then we'll have tiebreakers.
Exactly.
If we don't all agree.
We're doing that. So, Bill, your pick on that
You're on the lightning round, Bill.
Let's go North Carolina. They got a bunch of tall, good receivers.
I agree with Bill. They are playing out of their minds right now, so... I'm going to go with North Carolina for the upset on that one. Chaos.
That's a sexy pick. I like it, but I'm going to go with Clemson. I feel like Clemson has gotten themselves over their Clemsoning from the past, and I think they got that number one ranking, and they've held on to it this long. If they could beat Notre Dame, they could beat North Carolina.
All right. Fair enough. All right, Alabama versus Florida. Anybody want to stick their neck out for Florida on this one?
Nope. Not it.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Nobody's taking the bait there. USC versus Stanford. A little more interesting.
USC's got their guy. Fight on.
You really? You're going with Southern Cal?
I'll go with Southern Cal.
Okay.
Home team.
I'm going to take Stanford on this one. I feel like they at least have a little bit more to play for. But I could see this one going either way. I just think Stanford has a little bit of an edge.
This one is a repeat, is it not?
I don't think so.
I could have sworn they played, but I'm going with Bill on this one. I think USC has a little bit more talent, and you know, it felt like they were kind of hitting on all cylinders here at the end. So I think they're going to edge out Stanford, and I think the game's in LA.
Well, no, it would be in the it's in the Levi Stadium there in Santa Clara.
Do you know, Bill?
Where's the Pac-12 championship, Bill?
I got nothing. They didn't tell me that yet.
It is in Santa Clara. It is in Santa Clara territory, so it's basically just up the road. It's a home game for Stanford.
Well, I'm still taking USC.
All right. And then, of course, we have the Big 12 championship game. Oh, wait. They don't have a championship. Sorry. So, yeah, Oklahoma won that conference, presumably, and they are idle. Which brings us to the fun bit. Iowa and Michigan State. Bill, you're on the hook first.
I like Iowa 30, Michigan State 24. Four touchdowns, one field goal, one missed PAT. Michigan State is chasing us with that six-point difference all game. In the end, the defense wins the day.
Nice dig on Marshall Kane. By the way, but who's your standout player?
Come on, Des King. He's got to break the record. He's got to get that ninth or return a punt or something. I'm sticking with Des King from earlier in the season.
All right. Sounds good. Tori, you're up.
Man, I just feel for some reason like it's going to be a little bit of a track meet. I think both these teams have been aching to get out of the crappy Big Ten weather and onto a fast track. I've said it 12 times, and until they lose, they ain't losing. So I'm going with Iowa. I think we put up a robust 35 with CJ looking like the man of our dreams is our pick to click, and Michigan State is right on our heels, 35-31.
Ooh, okay, but your pick is CJ.
And CJ with finally gets his 300-yard game.
Oh, love it. Okay. Well, I'm kind of leaning towards your end of the spectrum. Let's see, both you guys are well over 30, so I'm going to split the difference here. I'm going to go 33 with Michigan State getting 28. I think that we are also going to kind of take advantage of that and get out to a fast start, although I do believe we kind of get, you know, that Sparty climbs back into it and maybe even takes the lead somewhere in the third or fourth quarter, but then, you know, they've game-planned against Kanzeri. They've game-planned against CJ. They've got a game plan to shut down Tevon and our tight ends. But they forgot about the wad. So somehow we bring him in, and it's just a change of pace back, and they cannot deal. They cannot cope. Their linebackers find themselves completely out of position on every play, covering tight ends that never see the ball. So I'm going to go with 33-28 and Wadley.
Sounds like fun. And another piece of good news for Iowa fans is I think I read where Michigan State has a pretty poor record against the spread. And with this being a close spread, you know, again, this one just screams pick 'em to me.
Well, let's hope so, because we're going to a lot of time, effort, and expense to get our butts up to that stadium. We don't want it to be another one of those experiences. So if we win, then the question for Bill, because we already had this conversation, so Tori, we're not allowed opinions again, but who do you want to face? If you do, you win, you're in the playoffs, who do you want in that first game?
Honestly, I wouldn't mind Clemson. I know I picked them to lose, but I think their defense wouldn't be able to take Iowa's offense. I mean, they're in the ACC. I think that's an easy out into the championship game. I'd take Clemson.
Yeah, I think that makes it unanimous then, because both of us said that, you know, although we could handle Alabama maybe, and nobody wants any part of the way Oklahoma's playing right now. So.
Likewise.
It does make you wonder, though, if what kind of defense Oklahoma could throw up at you just from playing in the Big 12 all season.
Well, I think they're the only ones that do. That's why it was such a shock to that conference. So
I don't know. They seem to give up a lot of points too.
All right. Well, Bill, hopefully we get you back on here at the end of this time next
Bill,
week.
Bill, you are planning on bowl game, playoff game, no matter what, or is it kind of in flux?
Now, wait a second. He was just bragging to me today about how many frequent flyer miles he had. So if we don't see you at a bowl game,
I'm going to be in Florida for work first week of January. So if we're playing down in Miami, count me in. If we're in the Rose Bowl, count me in. If we're in Phoenix, count me in. I don't see me making anything in Dallas. That's, I don't want to go to Dallas, really.
Nobody wants to go to Dallas.
Nobody does.
Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of part of what you have to do. You bank in those miles for something.
So one parting thing before we let Bill go is I do need to once more ask him, you know, how his man crush on Brett Bielema is going now that this year has occurred. Still wanting this guy in black and gold on our sideline, Billy?
You're going to make him choke on that crow, aren't you?
I'm not eating crow. Three Rose Bowls don't fall out of the sky, baby. Kirk had this great year. Brett had three. Let's see how
they do when an old man is violating children in their locker room. That's how one of those Rose Bowls fell out of the sky, my friend.
It happened. We'll see if next year is 2010 or more 2015.
Yeah, that's going to be a key for me. And I think if it is, then I think that's just teeing up Brian to take over after that season. So that's how I see it playing out. So,
well, there's going to be no shortage of amazing storylines. I'm like, is there any way Iowa's not ranked preseason next year, no matter what happens the rest of the way here?
No, there's no, not with our schedule and not with that. I mean, we're going to be preseason. And so the expectations, 12, 10, top 15.
What do you think, Bill?
Easily top 20, yeah, with everything we have coming back.
Well, let's see how we do, guys, in the bowl game and the playoff. You know, we still got a lot of football to play.
If King comes back, so basically what you'd have is three Heisman candidates. Then you'd have CJ, of course, Daw Akram Wadley, probably, and then Desmond King going for the rare defensive Heisman, right?
Let's not forget Drew Watt is petitioning for a fifth year.
There's your that's your Lombardi winner or whatever, that Lombardi. What do you call that? The defensive line one? I can't even remember. Buckus award. All the awards for Iowa. All the awards,
just line them up.
Is it Bronco Nagurski? Or did I just make that up?
I don't know, but I like it. It sounds good. Let's call it that.
It's good times are ahead, and let's hope they stick around and last. But there's still a lot of football left to be played this year, so. Get too far ahead of ourselves, you know. But I do believe that some of this is teeing up a changing of the Ferentz from the senior to the junior. Like I said in a text, Coach Fry built a coaching tree, but I think Ferentz is building a dynasty.
Well, from your lips to the football god's ears, Jim.
Exactly. Well, we're going to have to wrap up, Bill. Thanks so much for joining us and giving us the firsthand experience of the big red nightmare that you entered into. Glad that it had a happy ending.
You bet. Thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome. And Tori, I, we're just on our way to Indianapolis, where we'll say, on Iowa.
Go Hawks.